Blog Talk Radio.
A licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens. My co-host is Pat Foreman, author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles. Today is Thursday, September 6th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. You have the chickens, the coop, and the run, but do you have the egg cartons? Don't put your beautiful farm fresh eggs in any old used grocery store egg carton. Impress your friends with your very own custom labeled egg cartons from eggcartons.com. They have a large selection of custom egg cartons, stamps, and labels to choose from. Pick out your new custom egg cartons at eggcartons.com. That's eggcartons.com.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's GQFradio.com.
It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Got a great, great show lined up for everybody today. It is the first Thursday of the month, which means it is Poultry Today with Dr. McCrae. Yep, Dr. Bridget McCrae, PhD and poultry scientist, will be joining us shortly. And she's got a great topic today. We're talking all about Campylobacter. Yeah, what a great lunchtime subject. How about that? So she'll be teaching us about that a little later on when she arrives. So looking forward to a great show. Get those Chicken Whisperer notebooks ready to take some awesome, awesome notes today. Tomorrow is Fun Friday, and I'm going to do my best to do my duty. No, wait, that's the Scout's honor, I think. Do my best to do my duty to protect and whatever it is. I'm going to do my best to get back here on time at 12. There shouldn't be an issue, I don't believe, but tomorrow is our first doctor's appointment. I guess I should say Jen's first doctor's appointment since we made the announcement that she was a Prego. And so we're meeting a new doctor down here since we moved from up there. New doctor, new facility, the whole nine yards. So our appointment's at 9. We'll arrive early because we have all that new patient information to fill out. And then hopefully they've got their act together and we'll get in there and get out of there and the whole nine yards. And I can get back here at 12 o'clock to go live. I have everything set up and ready to roll. So all I have to do is just walk in the door and go live. So shouldn't be a problem. But we are definitely looking forward to tomorrow's show. Why is tomorrow's show so important, you might ask? Well, not only is it a Fun Friday where we give away tons of prizes, but we're giving away one particular prize tomorrow, and that is an awesome chicken coop from MyPetChicken.com. Yep, Derek and Tracy over there have been gracious enough again to donate a chicken coop. Actually, the winner has their choice of coops. They didn't choose one from a choice of three. You got the salt box, the four square, and the bungalow, and the winner will be able to choose whichever one they would like that would meet their needs. So that's going to be tomorrow, Friday, September the 7th, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So, another coup. No, you didn't miss it yet, action figure. Let me tell you how to enter. Alrighty, here's how to enter the chicken coop contest. You can only enter once, one entry per household. If you enter twice, you'll be disqualified. Here you go. To enter the awesome chicken coop contest, send me an email. Your email is your entry. Okay? Send me an email, and here's the address. contest@chickenwhisperer.net. The contest has been going on for about a month now, but here's how to enter. If you've entered in the last 30 days, you're entered. Trust me, we've got your email, and we will do this by random choice tomorrow. So the contest ends tonight at 11:59 p.m. Eastern. It ends tonight at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And again, send me an email at contest@chickenwhisperer.net. Now, in the subject line of the email, put Chicken Coop Contest. Okay? In that subject line, put Chicken Coop Contest. In the email itself, I need your name. Duh. Your shipping address. Because if you win, we need to get it to you. And your phone number. Those three things. Because I will call the winner live tomorrow on the air. Now, you do not have to be listening live to win. Because we wanted to be able to have our Facebook fans, Twitter fans, archive listeners, everybody participate. Okay? So, again, send me that email. contest@chickenwhisperer.net. And the subject line, put Chicken Coop Contest. And then in the email, name, shipping address, and phone number. And tomorrow we will call the lucky winner. Hopefully they'll answer. If they don't, it's not a big deal. We'll email them that they're the winner and invite them on the show after they receive the coup, put it together, and have it in their backyard. Yep, from mypetchicken.com. Gotta love it. So tonight is the end of the contest. Tonight at 11:59 p.m. Yeah, how cool is that? Very, very good. So hopefully you've entered. If not, go ahead and do so. You've got until tonight. 11:59 p.m. So far, so good here. A great day here at the homestead. Woke up pretty early this morning, and Jen got to work with her job, and I went outside. Yeah, got my overalls on, went outside, cranked up the old tractor, harrowed the fall garden for the last time before planting. Yep, it was. I figured I was right about on about how many times it would need harrowing after we got it bush hogged because all the grass had grown up it for the last 6 weeks due to our travel schedule and other things. But harrowed it for the last time today. After the radio show today, later this afternoon, I'll head outside, take the harrow off the tractor, and I'm going to be connecting the cultivator. I was going to put on the spreader and then go and get some fertilizer, but there's no need to fertilize the entire field. I'm just going to fertilize the rows. So we're going to do that by hand. It's about an acre garden, and we're just going to fertilize the rows by hand. So what I'm going to do is connect the cultivator to the, yes, I have a harrowing addiction.
You're exactly right, Pamela. I love to get on the tractor. So, yeah, and it's a lot cheaper that way. You're right, BYP. Why am I going to fertilize the between the rows and where I'm not planting and everything else? So I figured the same thing when I saw the price of some fertilizer. I was like, you're out of your mind. So that's what we're going to do. So we're going to set off the rows with the cultivator, and then I'm going to use my Eddie Boy plow wheel that I got off Craigslist, my power plow. Go down the center of each of those rows with that, and then what we'll do is we'll do a little hand fertilizer down that row, of course, and then we'll come back and plant by hand, and then we'll just cover it right up, and there we go. Our rows are planted, and we got our fall garden in. So yesterday's trip to the yesterday's trip to town was a disaster. Well, I wouldn't say disaster. Unsuccessful. I found all the seeds that I needed. Didn't get them, though, at the place that I got my seeds last year. But the plants they had were horrible. Horrible. They looked horrible. Half dead. I'm like, are you kidding me? So what are we planting with plants or by plants? We're going to be planting, let's see, the flats of plants we'll be getting broccoli, cauliflower, lettuce, and cabbage. Those will be the plants that we're planting. The seeds, what are we planting? Let's see, we've got turnip greens, collard greens, mustard greens, beets, carrots, English peas, rutabaga. I think that's it. So, and then, of course, here in November, I guess we'll plant garlic, thanks to Arlena. And loved yesterday's show. It was great. And then we'll be on our way. I'll keep the cultivator connected to the tractor because as everything starts to come up, if we have grass growing in the aisles in the rows between the plants, then I can just drive right down the field with the cultivator on, and it's going to cultivate in between my rows of plants. So I may do have to a little bit of tilling later on, but it is not going to be as bad as summertime. So throughout the winter, as the plants get, and most of these are low-growing plants, so I should be able to do that quite some time throughout the fall. Just ride right down the road with the tractor and cultivate that. So looking forward to doing that as well. So I've got my work cut out for me. Monday and Tuesday is planting day, folks. I know Monday is the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown. Next Tuesday is the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. So I will have to break from planting for the radio show, but nonetheless, Monday and Tuesday is planting day, because that's what it says. Had a surprise yawn there. That's what it says in the good old farmer's almanac. Hey, let me ask you this. Well, you know what? I'll save it for chicken trivia later. I got my chicken trivia question for today, and we got a cool prize to give away today. It's a brooder kit from I'm going to save that, I think, for online. I'm going to give away a very cool waterer from Ware Manufacturing. It's an in-the-coop waterer, or at least I would put it in the coop. It's smaller. It's called the Chicken Canteen. It's real neat. And I just put it in the coop in case your chickens, if you lock them up at night, need a drink at night. Now, most of the time, they're on that roost all night long. But just in case you want to have them some water inside there, it's pretty neat. It's small, doesn't take a lot of space up, and that's what we'll probably give it away today. So I've got it's pretty cool water. And for inside the coop, not something you would rely on to water your whole flock, like the chicken fountain by any means, but just a small supplemental waterer inside the chicken coop. Have you checked out the chicken fountain? Check them out online, thechickenfountain.com. You can find them on Facebook. Frank's a great guy. He's got a really neat product that works and just keeps the water clean at all times, and it's a great little product. Check it out. It's called the Chicken Fountain. You can see it online, and you can become a fan there at Facebook. So, but this is, again, different, small little supplemental water for inside the coop, but it's really neat. I like the thing. So we'll give that away, and I've already got my chicken trivia question in mind, and it's not even a chicken trivia question, and it has to do with the Farmer's Almanac. So how cool is that? All righty. So I posted some chickens in the news on the Facebook today. Some of it was kind of discouraging. A couple of towns that one had passed an ordinance against backyard poultry, made a family get rid of their chickens, and one was, I think, about possibly changing it to allow chickens, and then another negative one about not allowing backyard poultry, but we do try to post more chickens in the news than anybody else out there, and good pertinent news. And so I posted, got back to that, and posted three news articles about backyard poultry and backyard poultry laws this morning on our Facebook page. We hope you'll join us on Facebook at facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer. All righty, it is 12:15, quarter past the hour. It's time to head over here to the phone lines and bring on our guest today, which, of course, is poultry scientist Dr. Bridget McRae. Doc, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hey.
Made it.
Yes, I'm so glad. I had pictured you hightailing it across campus from your meeting all the way to your office to broadcast live and waving at everybody as you go along, getting back over to the poultry science department.
It was more like dodging raindrops. It started raining as I was walking back, so I went from a walk to a skip to almost a jog getting back here. And you know, the rain kept coming harder and harder, so, oh well.
We need it. Send it this way. We'll take it all we can get.
I think you'll have some farmers here saying they want it, so we'll keep what we get.
There you go. So have you been? What kind of events that have you been attending? What events have you had planning coming up? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, since last we spoke, we started classes here at Delaware State University. So the fall semester has begun, and I've been planning some new lecture materials, figuring out how to use one of those new devices called a smart board.
Oh, yeah.
Which I have to say is really cool because you can just touch right on it. But unfortunately for me, it also reminds me what a bad... a bad writer I am. I guess I don't write very clearly. And since it's kind of computer-based, anytime you kind of pick up the pen, it kind of stops and starts. And so it really emphasized that I need to work on my penmanship on the whiteboard, on the smart board. Anything else around here? Well, we're starting to plan for the spring and the fall. I've got a couple of events in the planning stages. We're going to be doing our Profiting from a Few Acres conference in Dover at the Modern Maturity Center in December. And then down the line further, in March of 2013, we're looking at March 2nd for Cooptastic.
Okay.
So those are some of the things we started planning for. I'm not teaching next spring, so I can go ahead and dedicate the time to planning Cooptastic properly.
What classes are you teaching this semester?
Every fall I teach Introduction to Poultry Science.
Okay, very cool.
And then every other spring I teach Advanced Poultry Science.
So these are freshmen? They just started college?
No, juniors. No. I usually get them at junior or senior level for my class.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, they've been here or transferred in, so they've got some of the general education out of the way, and then they can really focus on the fun stuff related to their major when they get to me. And, you know, Introduction to Poultry Science really gives them a broad overview of not only the history of the poultry industry and domestication, but it also gives them little snapshots of different topics like, say, behavior, welfare, incubation, brooding, anatomy, physiology. They also get to have guest speakers, listen to guest speakers, and get to know what paths educationally those folks took to get... Oops, there goes my cell phone. I'm sorry. Let me turn it off.
Oh, no problem at all.
Oops.
You probably could hear Caleb in the background. Jen just walked in to grab her laptop, and he was being very vocal, so no worries.
All right, sorry about that. Cell phone's on silent now. And so, you know, they get to see, all right, not everybody has a straight path to a career in the poultry industry. So, you know, I may be thinking that I want to do agribusiness, but it still fits into what the poultry industry needs, or something that I want to do that might be in a field related to the poultry industry. And then, of course, we go through, we have different labs. And so they really get a snapshot of, you know, poultry processing, food safety, And then we go a little bit more in-depth in advanced poultry science. So there you have it.
Very, very cool. Very cool. So it's going to be a busy semester for you, and I guess it runs all the way to Thanksgiving?
December.
December, okay.
Yeah.
For Christmas break.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome, awesome.
Finals are about halfway through December.
Okay.
Very good.
Awesome, awesome. Hey, we've got a great topic today. Get the notebooks out, your CW notebooks, and take lots of notes. And it's really a fabulous topic for the lunchtime hour.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
One of my favorite things. Bacteria.
You've actually had this before? Is that one of the things that you kind of accidentally infected yourself with?
I studied this for both my master's and my PhD, and I was also a part of a couple of different side projects on this particular bacteria. And, yes, I, as well as several others in this world, have contracted Campylobacter. And that's one of the things I'm going to talk about is what happens when you get this bug, you, versus what happens when your chickens get this bug.
Yeah, that's dedication right there, my friend. Oh my goodness. Well, I'm ready to take it all in. Let's roll with it.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure if you'd had your commercial break or not. Sorry about that.
Yep, already done. We're ready to roll.
Okay. Well, like I said, my master's and my PhD both looked at Campylobacter and Salmonella, but today I'm just going to talk about Campylobacter jejuni. It's everywhere. It's found in a lot of different hosts or animals. It's one of the leading sources of foodborne illness in the United States. There's 18 different subspecies of Campylobacter, but I'm going to focus on jejuni, Campylobacter jejuni, because that's the one that's associated most often with foodborne outbreaks and foodborne outbreaks related back to poultry. For those of you out there who want the details, these bacteria can move, so they have a little flagella or a tail at the back of their little single cells, and you know, it moves so fast you can't see it. And I've looked under the microscope, and these things are spinning around and moving around and just on a hurry to be somewhere. I'm not quite sure where, but you know, they move so fast with that little flagella or tail that you can't really see it. And bacteria can be categorized into a couple of really broad categories, gram-negative and gram-positive. And this one falls under the category of gram-negative. They don't form a spore, but they can change shape if they get stressed out. That's kind of cool. And they're really tiny. Sometimes if you are stressing the bacteria, and some people do this to see how they react to different kinds of cleansers or different types of environments that they can come across, they'll take on a round shape. But normally they're a spiral shape, which is kind of cool when you look at them under the microscope and you see them moving around. They're spinning and just a really neat shape. I always enjoyed looking at those. The other thing is they are really particular, and most bacteria can be, as to how they grow and what environments they grow in. Some bacteria have quite a range, but then there's perfect. You know, when the conditions are just right, and they're like, woohoo, let's party, let's go to town, let's replicate, and let's grow and grow and grow and grow and grow. So
now, is that grow as getting bigger or multiply?
Multiply, multiply, multiply.
Gotcha.
And when we say multiply, we're growing a culture of bacteria. So when I say grow, 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 you're growing a culture of bacteria. They really like it between 37 and 42 degrees Celsius, which is right around in between human body temperature and chicken body temperature, with a little bit of wiggle room.
We're the perfect host.
I know. And, you know, but it is a survivor. It can handle cold temperatures, but it doesn't really care for freezing. It gets a little grumpy about freezing. A lot of bacteria can survive freezing. This one likes the warmer temperatures. But the thing that's really cool about Campylobacter is that the air it breathes, it's really finicky about. You know how we have, you know, we prefer a larger percentage of oxygen in our air than this particular bacteria does. They like a low percent of oxygen, not completely devoid of oxygen, just a low level. They like 5% oxygen, along with 10% carbon dioxide and the rest of it being nitrogen. So 5% oxygen, 10% carbon dioxide, and 85% nitrogen. And there's a particular term for that. It's called a microaerophile. That means a little bit of air. And so it needs some very particular conditions to grow in our gut, in a, you know, in a chicken packaging situation, and that's one in which there's not a whole lot of air. So when people like myself are working with this particular bacteria, we grow it in containers that have special air in them so that we can get it to grow. But then, of course, we need to pull it out of those containers to take a look at them, maybe transfer them to another plate, see what kind of bacteria it is, and that exposes them to air. So we have to work very, very quickly out of respect for the chance that we might accidentally spend a little too much time in the air with this bacteria and thereby kill it. And when you're someone like myself and you're searching through hundreds of samples looking for this one particular bacteria, you don't want to take too much time and risk killing the one colony that grows on the plate that represents, yes, it was there on that farm. So you do have to hustle your buns a little bit with this particular bacteria because it gets grumpy and you don't want it to die. So it's a very particular bacteria. So if it's so grumpy about how it lives, and where it lives, and what makes it happiest, why is it a problem in the poultry industry? Well, it's found a really cool niche. If you think about us first, we eat chicken, and if we, you know, if we didn't cook it sufficiently, if we cross-contaminated in the kitchen, or we temperature abused the meat on the way home, you know, and we didn't put it in the fridge, you know, then we can infect ourselves. But, you know, it's not on every chicken, but it's in on a lot of chicken carcasses. It's a problem mostly with meat, not eggs.
Seems like every 6 months there'll be a study, and the headline will be, you know, 90% of chicken in the store is contaminated with, and you'll see this, you'll see that. And we tried organic, we tried regular, we tried these 10 stores, and this is our findings. And It just seems like every 6 months something comes out and says, I mean, bottom line, it's there, it's all over there.
Bottom line, there's always been bacteria on our food, so cook it.
there you go, exactly.
You know. They've done studies where they've looked at it, you know, across Asia, across Latin America, across Africa. And the really cool thing that, you know, your ability to become infected varies upon your immune status, your age, and also how much of the bacteria you take in. And, of course, the virulence of the organism, which can vary slightly. So if you're in perfect health and you take in 175 bacteria, you may not come down with Campylobacterosis. But if you are a child, like, say, Caleb, or someone who's elderly, or someone who has been taking immune suppressive drugs, like someone who has had a liver transplant, then a smaller dosage size like that 175 could be enough to make you sick. So it depends on you as a person and how you also maintain your health and how much you ingest. So the effective dose of Campylobacter is relatively low, low as 500 bacteria.
So it does depend on a lot
on
of times, or the amount as well. So
correct.
If we just get a little bit, then is what happening is our natural immune system might be able to handle that amount and get rid of it, or just not let it.
Our gut-associated immunity, yes.
Okay.
And that's, you know, every day we ingest bacteria and just everything that we do, but if you get the right amount, and, you know, could be that you're starting to come down with something and your immune system's working on that, so it forgets about your gut for a while, and holy cow, now you've got diarrhea, not a good party.
No.
So, you know, there's a varying amount of time between when you ingest the bacteria and when you start to see symptoms. It could be anywhere from 1 to 7 days. And when you are sick, it can last anywhere from 1 to 4 days on average, but it can go longer. Some reports have said 10 days. And there's about 2.2 to 2.4 million people affected each year in the United States with this bacteria. So it's worth studying, as many people have. When you're sick with it as a human, you can have a fever, headache, vomiting, dizziness, diarrhea. Abdominal pain is one of the key things. Abdominal pain that comes on very quickly. So, you know, and when I got sick with it, I had diarrhea and abdominal pain. A very slight headache. That's it. No fever, no dizziness. Of course, you know, I knew I was probably going to come down with it, and so I took it easy. And so those are similar symptoms to many other things, like the 24-hour bug, 24-hour flu. So just be careful and pay attention to when you have abdominal cramping. It could be a sign that you did something wrong in the kitchen, or somebody fed you something that wasn't well cooked, and maybe go through a list in your mind of what you've eaten over the last 3 or 4 days. And let me tell you, that's a trick. Can you remember 3 days ago what you had breakfast, lunch, and dinner and snacks?
Yeah, that's
challenging. You know, maybe most people can easily or fairly easily come up with what they had the day before or the day of. But once you get to day two or three, people really start to forget. Now, later on, after an incidence of campylobacterosis, there has been occasionally development of Guillain-Barré syndrome. And that's an autoimmune disorder of the nervous system. And, you know, you could come down with that later, you could not. But they're still doing research to see what the association is between Guillain-Barré and campylobacterosis. Now, interestingly enough, in chickens, maybe about 60 or 70 years ago, when the industry was just starting to put a few more birds together in housing, there were only a couple of cases of campylobacter infecting chickens. Then the chickens and the bacteria somehow made a deal with each other. Chickens said, okay, you can live in my gut, just don't kill me. And the bacteria said, deal, and I'll just propagate myself. And, you know, and then I can infect the next chicken and the next chicken. So it doesn't bother the chicken so much. It's not a big deal for the chicken. But it is for us if we get a carcass that's really contaminated and we mishandle it at home. Like maybe you left the carcass in the car on a really hot summer day and answered the phone, and you were on the phone for half an hour, and you realized, oh my gosh, I left the chicken in the car, and run out and go get it and stick it in the refrigerator. You know, get any meats into the refrigerator as soon as you get home. And that's just good planning. And, of course, cross-contamination within the home is quite common. You wouldn't use the same cutting board that you cut up a chicken on and then immediately use it for a salad without washing it.
Gross.
But students do it all the time. What's really interesting is the number one group for coming down with campylobacterosis are young cooks. People cooking for themselves for the first time, so people just going away to college. So when I teach this in my intro to poultry science class, I said, guess what? You're a target. And the students all go, I would never do that. And then, of course, some of them are like, I think I've done that. Okay, maybe I won't do it again.
Yeah, we can actually, we'll solve this problem right now because there is a finger to point and people to blame, and that is the kids' parents. Period. No one else is to blame for that except for the parents for not teaching their kids. So especially something like that.
My mom did a good job teaching me how to handle poultry in the home, but, you know, it's not always poultry to blame because there are other meat products that can carry campylobacter on it. And, you know, the majority is campylobacter jejuni. In one study, they figured out that campylobacter really isn't found in the chickens during the first 2 weeks of life. They find it when they're much older, like halfway through their production cycle that's about 6 weeks long. So, and the majority of that is campylobacter jejuni. Some suggest, not everybody, but the research is still being done, some suggest that the breeder flock is not the source. So it must be coming from somewhere else in the environment. And, you know, these chickens will continue to excrete the organism and their feces for several weeks. let me go through some of the things in the environment where they have found campylobacter to be a source. For humans, one of the first outbreaks was a waterborne outbreak up in Vermont. And I think it sickened about 2,000 people because it was such a small organism. It made it through the water filtration system for the city. And so people got sick because they got a sufficient dose, and they had to find out where it came from in the water. And there's been times when migratory birds carry the organism, and on their migration route, they'll settle down in a water source, and, of course, some of these birds will defecate into the water, and that can be a source of contamination for a town's water source. So, interestingly, this organism can handle surface water sources pretty well. So if you have a really dirty chicken water in your coop, you know, it might not just be algae that's hanging out in there. There could be some campylobacter in there because it can handle the water situation, not too hard for it to hang out in there in sufficient numbers to both sicken you or even your family members.
So here we go. We've all been there. So when you're taking the hose with the supersonic power nozzle on it and you're squirting it down into the water, that big tub.
You could aerosolize it, yeah.
You get splashed back right into the mouth. Look out.
And so you can have, you know, anywhere from 100 organisms to millions of organisms in the water. And, you know, you should clean your waters fairly regularly. And if your chickens seem to be knocking their feces into the water, that could be a way that the water gets inoculated or tainted with the organism. And, you know, if you're not good about cleaning the waters, then a biofilm could develop in there, and you could just be struggling with campylobacter in your water. So there's another reason to clean your waters really well, fairly regularly. All right. So you can't always culture campylobacter out of the water, but there are some other sources where campylobacter has been found, and those are called vectors, and we've talked about this in the past. Vectors come in what three forms, Andy?
Oh, my goodness. I couldn't tell you.
Oh,
Or if you tell me, I probably would know. I've heard
of the rodents, insects, and wild birds. Those are the three main vectors of disease agents. And anytime you come down with a case of campylobacteriosis, you've got a disease, unfortunately. So, you know, if you've got birds that go outside, they could pick up campylobacter from free-ranging birds that come near them. That's been identified. Oh, and here's a good one, mice. Another good reason for you to maintain good control over the feed that you provide them by putting them in a garbage can. Mice can carry and shed campylobacter for at least 6 months after they're infected. And they can carry it just on the day following they've been exposed to the campylobacter. They can carry it in the thousands to the tens of thousands per gram of each feces. So they can carry it at high levels.
And we may be getting to this, so just we'll just pass it on by and we'll get to it. BYP386 in the chat room says, and I'll elaborate, what about adding apple cider vinegar to the waters? Will it affect the campylobacter? Or is there anything we can add to the water that may kill this that would be safe for our birds?
Well, anytime you clean with soap and water and elbow grease, that will help get rid of it. Anytime you do a sufficient job of just cleaning soap, water, and elbow grease, scrubbing the threads of your waters, making sure it's nice and clean. Don't let it go 8 weeks and look like a cesspool before you decide to clean it. And I've seen people do this, so I'm not speaking gibberish. I've seen it happen. And, you know, if you want to add vinegar, great. But if it's already disgusting, don't bother.
True.
So if you just do a good job cleaning, you shouldn't have to do the rest of the stuff.
There you go.
So there's no substitute for elbow grease. When, you know, there's these organisms will call your bluff anytime. Rats can also be a source of campylobacter. So mice and rats, you know, on one duck farm, they found that 86% of the rats captured carried campylobacter in their guts. So you know, they can carry it as well. Don't forget about the larger rodents. Wild birds, let's talk about those a little bit further. They can spread it to water sources. They can spread it onto the feces that they defecate, you know, out on. I'm sorry, let's try that sentence again. They spread it to your grass if you let your chickens wander. You know, any forage that you want your chickens to work on in pasture areas, they can spread it there. And if you are sincerely trying to have a meat poultry operation, that would be something of concern to me, sincerely, because if you get up to a sufficient size, pretty soon you're going to have to follow the same rules for inspection, which will include periodic testing for this organism. So you've got to know what your levels are and how to abate the problem or get rid of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So for those who are moving from a hobby to a small enterprise, this is an organism that will make itself a blip on your radar screen soon enough. So, you know, what they did was this one really interesting study where they did some what's called mist netting around poultry houses, and they caught some of the birds that fly around near poultry houses. And they caught starlings, sparrows, blackbirds, juncos, cardinals. And they found about 6% of the droppings from those particular birds were positive. So it's out there. It's a possibility. 35% of migratory waterfowl in one other study were carriers of Campylobacter jejuni. So, you know, that's one of the reasons why I say don't let wild birds or wild waterfowl near your flock. Depending on what you're trying to do, it could ruin a lot of what you're trying to put together. And the bacteria doesn't care. It's doing its job. So insects, this is one of the things that always floors people. Insects like flies or beetles, chickens love to eat those, right?
Oh, yeah.
Especially the beetles. So we're just talking insects, not worms here, just insects. They can both be mechanical and biological carriers. So what's a mechanical versus a biological carrier? Biological means they carry the organism in their gut. So a mouse that has Campylobacter in its gut is a biological carrier. A darkling beetle that carries Campylobacter in its gut is a biological carrier. But they can also carry it on their feet. So if they walk through some feces, then they're spreading it on their, you know, every step that they take. And who hasn't seen chickens chase down and eat a mouse here or there?
Exactly.
Or, and definitely insects. So, you know, houseflies, they captured them on a poultry farm, and 50% of them carried Campylobacter jejuni. And, you know, they can carry it lots of different ways. They throw up on their food and then they reconsume it. They can carry it through their gut. They can carry it on their wings, their bodies, and on the hairs on the surface of their body. They have done studies, and flies do discharge it several days after they've, you know, ingested whatever carried the Campylobacter. Beetles are slightly different. At one point, they were thinking that the beetles were the reservoir for the commercial industry, and I'm not sure if they're still thinking that that's the case, because when you take chickens out of the house and you start composting the litter, sometimes the beetles will bury themselves into the insulation of the house. If you're using that spray foam insulation, they can just burrow and chew their way in. Or they go outside for a while and then come back when conditions are right. So, you know, they're slightly different in their behaviors, but they've been identified as carriers as well. So you may be a good flock owner, but your neighbor may not be. So that's yet another reason for you to exercise good management practices, because this bacteria is going to hitch a ride to a new host any which way it can.
Here's a kind of question based on that here. Let me see, scroll up here a little bit. My daughter dumped the litter from her pet guinea pig cage in the yard, and then chickens apparently ate the poo. Is that a risk?
Yes.
Okay.
Anytime you have one species that consumes the fecal material from another species, there's a risk of transmission of a lot of different types of diseases, fungal, bacterial, viral. Just not a good idea. It is a good idea, however, to learn how to compost.
Right.
And that would be a great way to handle guinea pig droppings in the future.
Now, here's this one here. Where'd it go? Let me scroll up. Oh, and you may be getting this. So if so, then we'll pass it by till we get to it, maybe after the 1 o'clock break, whenever it's on your list. Do chickens ever show symptoms of this illness? And if so, what they
Not
are?
Not really. No.
Not really. Okay. Okay. No. It's hanging out there.
Yeah. And remember, and like, they made a deal a long time ago.
Yeah.
I won't kill you as long as you give me a good home and let me spread to everybody I know. So another thing that you can think about is the bedding and the walls. Well, they did one study where they took the bedding and litter, which is a mixture of bedding and feces from a previous flock. That's what we call litter. They placed chicks on infected litter, and they became positive. The chicks became positive within 5 days. So, you know, chicks peck at everything. You know, they're probably picking it up from whatever they peck at. So it's always a good idea to put chicks down on fresh, clean litter. And that's one of the reasons why Dr. McCray says keep your age group separate. So if there's a problem in your adult flock, it doesn't come and affect your other age group before they're mature enough to handle it. So that's one of, you know, this is one of those organisms that does a good job of reminding us that we have to practice good biosecurity. So, let's see, wet litter is bad, so anytime you have a massive spill or a chicken knocks over your water and you've got, you know, wet litter, you need to get that out of there, because if you do have any sort of bacteria, it could start breeding in those nice, moist, wet conditions, and very soon thereafter you'll have an ammonia smell that nobody's going to enjoy anyhow. So, you know, keep your litter dry and clean, and that should help things along. Let's see. Houses that were poorly cleaned and poorly disinfected can turn positive again in a shorter amount of time than houses that have had the old bedding removed and adequate cleaning of the walls was performed. So those are things to consider. Air. Let's talk about air.
Mm-hmm.
I have told many times that folks should consider a ventilation system, but it's something that has to be maintained periodically. Get the dust out of it because dust can carry bacteria, including Campylobacter. And so maintaining cobwebs, get rid of your cobwebs, get rid of your dust. If you have a fan, get in there with a brush and get the dust off of there. And then start with your regular cleaning routine with the rest of the house so that when your fan kicks on, it doesn't immediately start blowing dust-laden air into your chicken's lungs, which they really won't appreciate because dust can carry bacteria, and that's a challenge. Interestingly, Campylobacter doesn't really care for dry conditions, so feed tends not to be a source for Campylobacter. There is a real positive, okay? But if you start to have ingredients that are infected and there's something that goes wrong with the process, the milling process, then there are cases that have occurred in the past where feed has become positive for Campylobacter. But, you know, those accidents do happen, just like that recall a while back that we've been chatting about, Andy. And things, you know, you get a new guy in the feed mill, sometimes mistakes are made. The hatchery. Let's talk about the hatchery. A lot of you out there listening today order your chicks from hatcheries, and those hatcheries are very responsible in their testing programs. They test their breeding stock. They test their hatchery cleanliness and sanitation. But for those of you out there who maybe hatch your own in your own incubators, this is one of the bacteria that can take advantage of the really nice, warm, and moist conditions that occur in a hatchery. And so it's very important for you to do a good job cleaning out your incubators once you're done. And periodically do that through the hatching season and use a sanitizer so that you can get an effective kill of this bacteria, as well as others and fungus that can affect you in the hatchery. But if a hatchery like, say, Murray McMurray or Meyer or Stromberg's or Ideal or any of those hatcheries out there, Mount Healthy being one of them as well, if any of those hatcheries out there have a problem, they have to think, okay, what am I doing wrong? How do we fix this? Let's go through and see what our cleaning schedule was. Did we miss a step? Test this sample, test that sample, test it for this, that, and the other thing. Why wouldn't you care just as much about your hatchery and your hatcher as they do? No, you may not be in it for profit, but you want to make sure that what you hatch out stays healthy for a good long time and lives a good long life. So think about doing a good job cleaning out your hatchers, especially before you put things away for the year. And if you can, periodically through the hatching season, you know, go in there, take a day, clean everything out, do a good job sanitizing, and then start it back up. Since the egg passes through the cloaca of the hen before it's laid into the world, there is a chance that the eggs that you put into that hatchery carries Campylobacter on the outside of it. So, yes, you are cleaning your hatcher. Is it a good idea to wash your eggs? Maybe, especially if you see, you know, fecal material on the eggs that you're about to put into the hatcher. That would be one that I would risk washing off the bloom to get that fecal material off that egg before I put it in my hatcher, especially if it's a breed that I was having difficulty with and was working really hard to cultivate. Of course, footwear can be a problem. You can carry campylobacter around on feces that you pick up on your footwear. So, you know, cleaning your footwear between pens is important, especially if you're going to go to somebody else's farm and you don't know what they have and you don't know what you have, so be a good neighbor and don't share. There are some seasonal variations, and it's interesting. Summer months offer the highest rates of infection. So they can, like I said, they can handle the heat. Like June through September, 100% rates of contamination. And then lower rates were found in March, like 50%. And that's when they were doing a study of the seasonal recovery of Campylobacter in commercial conditions. Interestingly, Campylobacter does this really funky little thing called viable non-culturable, which means it gets really stressed out and grumpy, and apparently it's still alive, but you can't culture it. That's when it's really grumpy. And it's really hard to describe this particular state. And, you know, there's still a lot of research being done about it. It's called viable non-culturable Campylobacter. But if you pass it back through a chicken, sometimes you can still get it to turn positive in the bird. All right. Let's talk about processed products. When I did my master's degree, I looked at two things. I looked at birds being raised for the Asian lifestyle market in San Francisco and Los Angeles. And I also was looking at free-range chickens. And at that time, there just wasn't that much out there as far as research, other than, yes, they had been found to carry Campylobacter at a level of prevalence that was similar to poultry raised in commercial conditions. So don't think that just because you're not doing things commercially that your birds could be free of it. Remember, it's hiding. How do you find out if it's there? You'd have to pay for testing. But why pay for testing unless you're selling the meat? So why should you, the backyard farmer, care about this organism? Well, you handle your chickens every day. Wash your hands before you prepare food. Common sense, right? But yep. It needs to be said, because I'm sure we've all done it. We've gotten distracted, and then you're wondering, did I wash my hands or not? Just wash them again. Just be practical. They found that when they looked at finished poultry products, Campylobacter was isolated from 68% of the ready-for-market products. For fresh oven-ready chickens, they found 61% of them positive, and 100% of New York dress chickens were positive. That was in 1988. So, you know, there's some newer research out there. I'm just quoting straight out of what I've got in my book here. So it's a really unique organism, and, you know, its prevalence is still being determined. There have been some changes and the way we test for this organism in the chicken that you buy at the grocery store. And so I think maybe this might be a good time for you to go to commercial, and then I'll talk about that briefly.
Yeah, that sounds perfectly fine. Folks, we're listening to Dr. Bridget McRae, PhD, poultry scientist and professor. And great topic today. We hope you're enjoying it, taking lots of notes. And yet we will return right after this short break. Stay with us.
When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensie. Technology you can trust.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
And you can find all the great Ware products here.
Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com.
And we have a new sponsor this month, Treats for Chickens, health and happiness for your modern backyard pet chicken. Healthy chicken basics, non-toxic bug relief, treats, organic snacks, and more, all created with your backyard pet chickens in mind. At Treats for Chickens, we treat your chickens well. Find us online at treatsforchickens.com or ask for us in your local farm and feed store or favorite pet shop. That's treatsforchickens.com.
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. And we are special guest today is, of course, Dr. McCray, Dr. Bridget McCray, PhD and poultry scientist. Great topic today. Hoping you're taking lots of notes. And let's welcome her back to the show.
Hey, I'm checking out these sponsors that you have, the Mega Fountain and the Treats for Chickens. Kind of cool.
Yeah, Treats for Chickens, they've been around for a few years now, a smaller business, and of course we always love to support the small businesses, and they have a ton of organic treats that look almost delicious enough for us to eat.
I'm not eating the mealworm, no way. Sorry, not my thing.
Treats for Chickens, absolutely. But they add a little crunch to your salad, Dr. McCray.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure. Oh, my goodness gracious.
Don't get me wrong. I have no problems with the chickens eating. It's just not for me. I'm not going to be the guy who falls behind Andrew Zimmer and trying everything that he tries on that bizarre food show.
That's great. Yeah. Not me either. No thanks.
I was looking at that mega fountain at the chicken fountain. Did they have a lid on it? I don't know. The picture's kind of small, and I can't quite tell.
It's completely sealed. And chicken fountain, yeah. And it's got, in fact, I've got one, and my neighbor stole it because he liked it so much. But, and it's hooked up to the hose, so he has a formula based on how many chickens you have, and he'll tell you, based on which unit you buy, how many gallons of rotation per day based on how many chickens. So you know you've got, the right size for the right chickens, so you get fresh water all the time.
Ah.
So you don't chickens in a big container, then they won't recycle the water in it based on however many days or 2 days or how many gallons per day, they, based on how much they should drink. And you can add apple cider vinegar to it if you want to, and you can add probiotics to it if you want to, and it's got the nipple drinkers below, and 24/7 constant water, never running out.
And
it's,
you know,
it's
what I saw at the fair this year was something similar to this for the pigs.
Really?
What they did was a giant, they put a little nipple at the bottom for pigs have a different nipple drinker than chickens do, folks. Sorry, you probably knew that, but I thought it was worth saying. so what they did was they must have had like a 8-inch PVC pipe that just goes straight up, and they put a cap on the end of it, or, as I saw one young man do, he was goofing around with his friends, knocked the cap off, and the pig laid down on it and broke. So he had to turn a bucket over and put that over the top of the water.
This thing also, he's got a special heater element that you can take the top off, slide this heater element down into it, and then, of course, it plugs into an outlet. And so you have to
–
you're
responsible. Can you put the lid back on once the heating thing's
in
there?
Yeah, it has actually a lid on top of it that actually –
oh, okay.
So then, so in the wintertime, really your responsibility is making sure the lines to this doesn't freeze, but he's got everything you need to make sure the unit itself and the water inside the unit does not freeze in the wintertime. So, yeah, it's pretty neat. And that's the Chicken Fountain, thechickenfountain.com, and folks can see him on Facebook. Frankie's a neat guy, and he may even be – I'm not going to say this, but he may send you one if you ask him, because he's new kind of backyard business.
Well, our indoor pastured poultry unit just made it up yesterday.
Ah.
And so that might be an interesting study to see, you know,
yes,
what birds prefer, the open system or the closed system. And, you know, we do get cold winters here, so heating is important.
Yeah, he might be listening, and if not, I will shoot him over an email after the show and get you all connected.
Cool. Yeah, we've got this, we've got a 1-acre building that's going up, and we're going to have plant pasture in there, different types of pasture, and then see how poultry do on different types of pasture performance-wise. And, of course, you know, behavior is important, so you can take a look at, you know, what breeds prefer what types of watering systems. And being a microbiologist, I may take some samples. You never know. That usually is my inclination. And then teach some students how to do microbiology and you know, make reports on what they find. So that's what may occur in the next few months. But thank you for telling me about both of these. That's kind of interesting. I'm going to check that out.
Please do.
Okay. Well, I was going to continue telling you a little bit more about the products that you buy or what you may be choosing to scale up to as far as bird sales. As far as chicken meat, like I said, Campylobacter tends not to be a problem inside eggs. It tends to be more of a problem of poultry meat. Doesn't mean that the chickens won't necessarily deposit it on the outside of eggs, and so clean eggs are a good idea, especially when you put them into the incubator. So the digestive tract of a chicken can contain up to 10 million Campylobacter per gram. So one of the reasons why we say before you process or slaughter your chickens, you need to make sure that the gut is clear. So you take the food away from them for about 4 hours before you start processing your chickens. That way you reduce or pretty much eliminate the amount of feces that are in the digestive tract. And therefore, should you accidentally break the gut while removing it from the body cavity of the bird, you know, the likelihood that the contents of the gut would spill out and infect the carcass would be lesser. So there is some real common sense to what is suggested as you prepare your birds for processing and slaughter. I know some people out there, you like to let your birds lay for as long as possible, and then she becomes chicken soup. Or maybe you process a few of the roosters after you let them grow out and fatten up. So about 4 or 5 hours before you process those birds, You want to take food away. Don't take water away. Water, especially in hot weather, you should keep with them. In the winter, you might be able to get away with taking the water away for an hour or so before you process them. But keeping water in front of them is still a good idea. Now, when you transport chickens, anytime you have to drive them to somebody who does the processing for you, around here sometimes the Amish, not everybody has the right processing equipment, so they go see, you know, old Mr. Yoder down the road who has the right equipment. When you transport birds, that causes the birds to stress a little bit. And that can cause Campylobacter levels to increase in the fecal material that they deposit. Because we all know scared chickens make deposits. And if they're stressed out, they can deposit more Campylobacter into the feces. So, if you can arrive with a bird sitting in its own feces, and so there's already Campylobacter on the feathers and the breast skin. So it's a good idea to keep them as calm as possible, transport them for as short a distance as possible, that which is reasonable for your areas. And I do realize that you have listeners from all across the U.S. and everybody has different situations, but it's something to consider in the long run. In one study, only 12% of the chickens harbored the organisms on the farm, but after transport, 56% of the chickens were positive. So there's the example, there's the research. I found that research study to be really, really interesting. And then when we did our research study, we checked that out too. And yeah, they do stress out a little bit more and deposit a little bit more, and those were free-range chickens that we were taking a look at. When you're processing your chickens at home, you may do it the old-school way, all by hand, but if you're using some pieces of equipment to help you in the processing procedure, you may need to pay special attention to cleanup of those pieces of equipment, because some equipment is used by every single carcass and is kind of a point of cross-contamination during the processing steps. So things like the scalder, the picker, and then once you're all done eviscerating the bird, you should always chill your carcass. And most everybody will use a big tank or a garbage can with some ice water in it. And when you put, you know, more than one bird in there, then that, you know, what was on one bird can float over to another bird. And so those are things that you need to clean really well, and you got to make sure that whatever birds you put into the chiller do not have any feces whatsoever on them. So make sure you do a very good job of rinsing before you put them in your chill tank, whatever your chill tank may be. We usually use one of those industrial-scale, food-safe garbage containers, the gray ones, and they're very easy to clean out afterwards, and we scrub them down and then disinfect them. Disinfecting and scrubbing out the picker is probably the most difficult because you have all those rubber picker fingers. But still, attention to detail will help you in the long run, especially if you're inviting other people over to process their birds. You don't want to give them back something that's less clean than what they gave you. So those are three pieces of equipment that you should really pay attention to if you're processing your birds at home, or if you're taking your birds over to somebody else to be processed. If that picker's not clean when they start it up, you maybe should find somebody else. Okay? And it's okay to be nosy. If they don't want you walking around and taking a look at your facilities, you know, how clean are things? You need to make that decision. So that's one of the things you need to consider for small-scale processing. For large-scale processing, there's been some significant changes recently with regard to performance standards. Campylobacter never really was on the radar screen until a few years ago, and now Processing plants for commercial poultry have performance standards that must be met. So they were already doing this for salmonella. And, you know, everybody talks about salmonella.
Right.
And so it was finally investigated enough that, and we knew enough about Campylobacter that we could start doing something about it. And so Campylobacter now has performance standards. Let's see. So there's a couple of different ways they test for Campylobacter, and the way they test or the way they sample on auger plates is slightly different from Campylobacter, and I'm not going to go into that because I'm pretty sure your audience will go straight to sleep. But the Campylobacter and the Salmonella, throughout processing in a day, you know, there's about a 51 sample set that's done. And for Campylobacter, in a 1 milliliter sample, they're only allowed to have 8 positive samples for each lot or each 51 sampling lot. That's much tighter, much tighter. And turkeys is slightly different, and I'm not going to go into that because I know not as many people eat turkey, and that really wasn't the focus of what I was going to talk about. So, you know, throughout the day, after so many birds are processed, the processing plants have to pull samples to make sure that their process and procedure is meeting the performance standards for cleanliness. And, you know, after 51 samples are processed, you know, they're looking to see if they can get less than 8 being positive. That's their performance goals or their performance standards. I don't think there's enough information out there yet as to how they're doing, but of course, if they don't meet their goals, there's already been laid out what happens if you don't meet your goal. And so when I talk to my students in my class, Andy, mm-hmm. one of the things I have to talk to them about is if you're going to work in the poultry industry, at some point you're going to be dealing with the processing plant. And it's not so much the chickens going through the processing plant, it's the people.
Yeah.
So you're going to be working on committees. You're going to be facing issues that come up as far as cleanliness, changes to performance standards, new equipment that has to be purchased, tested, and then, you know, can it meet the performance standards? So those are some of the things that we talk about in my introduction to poultry science class. So that not only are they learning how to raise the chickens, because as most of your listeners know, it's pretty fun and easy to raise a chicken. But when you start talking about human health and food safety, there's a whole different dynamic there, and you're dealing a lot more with people and their decisions.
Right.
And how that affects what makes it onto your dinner plate. So the performance, let's see, so the new standards for Campylobacter is based on percentages. It's, you know, they need to look at total sample specific positive results, and you know, a broiler plant will have no more than 8 positive samples in the 1 milliliter portion out of 51 samples. So, you know, they've got some pretty tight goals. And Salmonella, which was not the goal of today's talk, they just got really tightened up on. So I think you should be a little bit happier with what you buy at the grocery store if you do choose to buy chicken at the grocery store. Things have changed, and there used to be no performance standards when I was a student, and now there are. And so that which makes it to your dinner plate isn't the same necessarily bacteriologically from what made it to your mother's plate or your grandmother's plate.
Hmm.
Lots to consider, huh?
Absolutely. This is
it's one of my favorite bacteria just because it's such an oddball. It doesn't like air. Okay, it only likes a little bit of air. So Yeah. When I was learning how to do microbiology, it was just one of those bacteria, and we had a great technician in the lab that I worked in. She was like, oh, no. Think of it this way. And this bacteria does things this way. And so it was just really cool to think about a bacteria in a whole new light. There you go,
cool.
Andy.
Awesome.
Now you guys know about Campylobacter.
And thank you for that. I also wanted to let you know that the founder and inventor of the Chicken Fountain is on air. He was listening. He stepped away. He came back, caught the last part of our conversation about his product.
Oh.
But he's back now, and I sent him over a little message, and he said he's going to pack up and send you a unit tomorrow.
Oh.
And so I'm going to kind of get your information to him and whatnot so you can give him the right address so he can send you one. So
well,
you
thank
can
you.
Do with that whatever you choose to do, and with that test it or review it or whatever the case may be. I'm sure he would
see a student research project in the future.
That's perfect. Awesome. And he would love to have that done on his products. That's cool. So that's good news to get y'all connected and whatnot. And if anything, make some new contacts and some new friends.
Great.
So thank you so much for joining us today. Awesome information as always. I know you will return here in a couple of weeks.
And I can't wait to hear your question today.
Yes, I do have that question. Thank you for reminding me. It looks like next time you'll be here.
Did everyone like that segue? Here, don't forget the question.
Exactly, absolutely. Getting involved with exhibition poultry, poultry clubs, and youth poultry is in a couple of weeks on the 20th. So very, very cool. That's
something I'm very passionate about and I enjoy very much because I see young people out there, you know, some of them don't know what careers to choose, and heck, when I was a teenager, I was one of them. You know, what school do I go to? I really like chickens. I really like showing chickens. And so the folks in this community of people that I'm going to talk about in a couple of weeks are really wonderful, especially with children.
Cool. That's awesome. And 4-H and FFA and the poultry clubs and the youth, and just got to love it. And I'm sure the chicken, what is it called? I always call it sounds like a chicken dish. Poultry bowl.
Avian bowl.
Yeah, yes, I'll have an avian bowl with a side of asparagus. And
you know, when you Google avian bowl, there's not a lot of bowls that come up with fowl on them.
You're right.
There just isn't.
Because I've looked for avian bowl questions before to try to cheat without having to buy the book, but on the list. So, hey, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank
we'll
you
see
for
you
having me on, Andy. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Snap Lock Chicken Coops, the American-made, maintenance-free,
plastic hen house. With its double wall construction and adjustable ventilation, it's the perfect year-round home for your small flock. It will not fade or rot and is unaffected by rain, sun, heat, cold, or chemicals. The removable litter and nesting trays make cleaning a breeze. Every access point is lockable for maximum predator resistance. Snap-lock chicken coops weigh just 40 pounds and snap together in minutes. So spend more time enjoying your flock and less time building and maintaining your coop. For additional information, please visit snaplockchickencoops.com. Also available at mypetchicken.com, critter-cages.com, and chickensforbackyards.com.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Our special guest segment today was brought to you by NatureWise Natural Poultry Feeds by Nutrina. They're the natural choice for nutritionally balanced feed for your flock and contain only fresh, wholesome ingredients. You can learn more at NutrinaNatureWise.com. That's NutrinaNatureWise.com. And again, Nutrina was the sponsor for today's special guest segment with Dr. McRae, Ph.D. and poultry scientist. Alrighty, it is now time for our trivia segment. I did post the information in the chat room about today's prize. I'll scroll up a little bit and click on the link myself. It is from Ware Manufacturing. Ware Manufacturing, and you can get a lot of their Ware products at many stores across the country, including critter-cages.com. And today we have the Hanging Chicken Canteen. The Hanging Chicken Canteen. We've talked about this. If you maybe travel with your chickens, putting this in the cage for a good waterer for that, maybe inside the coop for just a small supplemental waterer for overnight. But there you have it. It's about 5.5 inches wide, 4 inches deep, about 5.5 inches tall. And you can see that at Ware Manufacturing. And I posted the link there. So that is the prize we are giving away today. And I have a pretty interesting question to do. So let me in the chat room get some participation from you. The first person, just post a caller number anywhere, let's just say between 1 and 20. Post a number between 1 and 20 in the chat room, and that's the number who we'll take when we go to the contest. And then once we have that number, okay, caller number 10 from Chicka Chicka. Caller number 10. And the number to call in once I ask the question, 347-637-3237. 347-637-3237. Here's the question. Many farmers' almanacs have a hole that is punched in the top left-hand corner. Okay? Many farmers' almanacs have a hole that is punched in the top left-hand corner. What is that hole used for? Why is that hole there? Okay, 347-637-3237. Yes, if you have won anything from Ware in the last 60 days, you're not eligible. But if you won something from Ware longer than 2 months ago, then yes, you're eligible for this contest. We just, again, we have a big listener group, but we want to make sure we get everybody a chance to win these cool prizes from our sponsors. We're taking caller number 10. If you've won anything from Ware Manufacturing in the last 60 days, you're not eligible for this contest, but everybody else is. So give us a call right now, 347-637-3237. That's 347-637-3237. The question is, many farmers' almanacs have a small little hole punched in the top left-hand corner. What is that hole used for? You might be able to Google this or Yahoo this or whatever to get the answer. Answer has to match mine because this is my understanding of what that hole is for. So 347-637-3237, and we're taking caller number 10. Caller number 10 right now. I want to send a shout-out real quick before we end the show after this contest. First, to everybody in the chat room, we thank you. Action Figure, we've got Brenda, Brits and Grits, Chicka Chicka. We've got Dawn. We've got Dr. McRae, of course, is in there. East Dallas Dave, we got Equine, we've got Granny Kathy, several guests. Thanks for joining us, guests. And let's see, we've got Heidi and Jessica and Catherine and Ken Ken, and we've got Linda and let's see, Miss Johnson. We've got New Dawn Farm Girl. We've got Pamela, Poet's Wife, Ralph, Sweet Potato, The Fam Farm, and many others listening live that can't access the chat because of their work. Their works block the chat. And, of course, send a shout-out to all the folks that listen to the archive, literally hundreds and thousands of you, iTunes, Podcast.com, Zoom.com. Thank you for listening. And all the feed and seed stores across the country that stream this radio show live for your listeners, we thank you for doing so. Hope business as well. And last but not least, the homeschoolers out there that incorporate this show into their curriculum. So thank you very much for that. So let me get over here to the switchboard. We said caller number 10. And we're going to the phones right now. Caller number 10. Now, don't hang up, folks, because remember, the answer has to match mine. So if you may be caller number 11. And if caller number 10 doesn't get it right, then we go to caller number 11. Now, the answer has to match mine. You might find something different on Google, but it has to match my answer for what my understanding is and study of this question. So we'll go to the phone lines right now. Caller calling in from area code 980. 980, you're on the air. State your name. Tell us what state you're calling from.
Hello?
Yep, you're live on the air. Tell us your name and what state you're calling from.
Holy crap, Andy, it's Jessica.
Oh, hey, all right, Jessica, let's call in. Okay, now tell me this. What do
Hang
you
on.
Think?
Let me
what
grab
do you...
it.
Huh? Hello?
Yeah. I got to grab my iPad. For what?
It has to match mine now.
It's so you can hang it up.
So you can hang it up. Let me see if that is the correct answer that matches my answer.
Congratulations, congratulations, congratulations.
That is the correct answer that matches my answer, so you can hang that up. Preferably, just get a hammer and nail and nail that hammer that nail right into the wall there next to the toilet in the bathroom, and you just hang that farmer's almanac right there on the wall next to the commode, and there you have it. You'll know exactly when to plant your crops every single year, or in the outhouse. Yes, back in the day, in the outhouse, you just nail there in the outhouse and hang that farmer's almanac right there. 100% correct. Chock full of information here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It is also totally against the law everywhere in America to have an outhouse now. So according to our good friend Andrew Odom of tinyrevolution.us, so illegal. Doesn't meet any code anywhere in the country, apparently, to have an outhouse. So very good. Congratulations, Jessica. Send me over an email. You've won that chicken canteen from Ware Manufacturing, and we'll get that information over to Heather and then get that information and get that shipped out to you as soon as possible. So very, very good. And Linda says she'd actually know someone that has an outhouse. I wish kind of we had an outhouse, too, for backup and just in case. Jen's kind of shaking her head no, but hang on. All righty. Brits and Grit says that they are in West Virginia and actually have an exception. Very, very, very good. Alrighty, well, folks, thank you so much for listening today. We appreciate your participation in the show, both in the chat room and calling in, and we appreciate you listening. Remember to follow us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, become a fan on Facebook, and don't forget, tomorrow we're giving away an awesome chicken coop from MyPetChicken.com. Go over to MyPetChicken.com right now, okay? MyPetChicken.com. Over to the left-hand side, click on Wooden Chicken Coops. Okay, and then you'll be able to see the coops you can choose from. There's the four square, the salt box, and the bungalow, and we will actually call a winner tomorrow live on the air, and And hopefully they will be at home. If not, it's okay. They'll still win. We'll send them an email and then bring them back on the show live when they receive it and they have it built and they're enjoying that. So that's going to be tomorrow. Tomorrow, of course, is Fun Friday. And also head on over to Facebook and visit some of our friends over there, Talking Chicken Scratch. They posted their website in the chat room, www.talkingchickenscratch.com. And then there's the Chicken Fountain. I think it's www.chickenfountain.com. Or if you say thechickenfountain.com, I think they have both domains. But www.chickenfountain.com. Say hello to them and check them out. And, of course, Frank's going to be getting Dr. McCray one of the products that he has there. And she's sounds very excited to receive that and do some testing with it, with her educated college flock there at Delaware State University for the poultry majors. So Jessica's saying, hey, I love Dr. McCray. Yes, don't we all? She's been coming on the show for quite some time. The first and third Thursdays of every month, we have Dr. McCray, PhD poultry scientist. So we'll see you all tomorrow here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer for our awesome chicken coop giveaway. Have a great day, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Ha ha ha.